From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It is Wednesday. It is Wednesday, January 15th, and I got mixed up because I'm usually on Fridays, but I'm Andy Klein, your host for today, filling in on this Wednesday. Thanks for joining the conversation, and on today's show, the annual Movie Night Choice Fest is coming up. That's January 17th. Folks from the Juno Pro-Choice Coalition will be here to talk about that. And how about some death with dessert? Well, True Crime Alaska brings the tale of an untimely death of a boy hero this Saturday. And the Juno Police Department is recruiting for officers and dispatchers and has a new addition to its wellness program. We'll hear about that. And also a bunch of local dance events are coming up. We'll talk about them with Two Left Feet Alaska.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
And KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Kliné have stewarded this land for thousands of years. Today, our studio sits on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. And we recognize those families who travel to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta ka na khaya ha an ka gnish chish.
Well, welcome back. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host for today, Andy Klein. And Choice Fest is coming up. It's happening on January 17th. It's an annual film fest put on by Juno Pro-Choice Coalition. And with me now are Amy Keston and Lorraine Jones, both from the Juno Pro-Choice Coalition. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thanks, Andy.
Always an awesome annual event, and used to be Luna Fest, right, for people who remember that. And now it's Choice Fest, but always a really interesting collection of kind of short films, right? Typically, it's always a collection of short films.
Yeah. Last year wasn't, but we worked harder to find them this year.
We have a couple that are about a half hour in length, but many that are 5 minutes, six minutes.
So let's start running down the list of films, and I know you've got the list of films there in front of you.
Well, we don't want to share the list of films, but I could tell a little bit about what they're at. Well, we don't want everybody to go and try to find and watch them ahead of time.
Oh, it's true. We live in a different time now, don't we?
Some of them are very accessible.
Others aren't.
But we are going to start with a film that talks about self-managed abortion through oral medication, and that is something that is available here in town. But I was just talking to a few people today that didn't know about that. And so we're going to share that information. And that,
are the films typically always sort of documentary, or are they sometimes like first-person experience? Are they fictional or all
variety,
over the map?
Variety. Everything.
All of the above.
Yeah. Everything, yeah. And it varies from year to year. It's very different now that we don't have Luna Fest, that we have to go and explore.
Well, Luna Fest was Luna Bar, right? And they would curate this festival, and then it would travel around the country.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we started doing that in 2008 with Luna Fest. And it worked right up till the two COVID years that we actually had their films that we were able to present online. So we had this virtual thing for 2 years.
Almost survived COVID.
Almost. But then they decided not to do it anymore. So last year we scrambled, mostly Amy scrambled, to come up with films for the thing. And it was very difficult to find them, you know. So we had a great turnout, but the feedback was sort of that they were too heavy last year.
Well, so, I can see, you know, I mean, we're in heavy times.
Exactly.
We are.
That's what we said.
So, you know, it's sort of.
But who wants to go out and come home feeling more depressed than when they went? So this is our 18th year, and tickets are available online, and we really encourage people to do it online because we have changed our main focus to make this a fundraiser for our PAC, for our Political Action Committee, because we help get...
We get those postcards in the mail before the elections and things like that, right? All that information that comes in, it helps you make decisions.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And I think it's really, really important that we get pro-choice policies through the politicians. So right now, Juno is totally pro-choice, our delegation is. And we've helped get, you know, it's pretty evenly split right now, but and maybe leaning a little bit our way, which is great.
And those postcards are just they're an important part of how people make decisions about who they want to vote for, you know, the pluses and minuses of different candidates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
real service
anyway,
that you guys do.
If you buy it online, you have to give a little bit of information because, of course, we have to report to the Alaska Public Offices Commission because it's funds for the PAC. But the last total we heard, we had sold 88 tickets so far.
Wow, that's great.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah.
And that was a day and a half ago. So go out online. JunoChoice.com.
Well, you've been doing it 18 years. I mean, I suspect that there must have been a moment when you knew that Luna was dropping sponsorship and wasn't going to do it where you thought, okay, now what, right?
Yeah.
Or are we going to continue to do it?
Yeah,
or how will we continue?
It was quite late. It was like in November that we found out that we weren't going to have it for January, which we've always done this as our celebration for Roe v. Wade, till we didn't have Roe v. Wade anymore, but we can still celebrate what we used to have. So anyway, that's where we are. And
so Amy, did it fall on you mostly to do that first curation on your own? Or
well,
how did that...
I was actually in Maine at the time.
Okay.
So between trying to call everybody, I had a crew of a few of board members that were looking as well. But I think what people don't understand is that you can find a film, but then you have to contact the distributor.
Yeah, you're not supposed to just show films.
You can't just,
to the
in fact, we were we them, loved the films from the PBS did a great series, but they said they couldn't work with us because we were a political organization.
Makes sense. I understand.
Yeah,
I understand
but,
the reasoning there.
Yeah,
but
so
yeah,
people
right.
don't understand all the steps. You can.
Sure.
I found lots of great films, but contacting the distributor and having them. Another great film that I really wanted to show: Red, White, and Blue. And I encourage people to. You can watch it online for a small, short donation. They wanted to approve all of the other films we were showing,
oh,
and it was going to cost us $2,500 to rent their film, even though it was going to other. Nonprofit. So there's a lot of
the
steps.
Economics of the film industry mm-hmm. you get into, and you know, realizing how all that stuff works. Mm-hmm. It's very, very, very true.
Yeah.
But you got, you know, it's what's really interesting is that you had this thing, you had this major sponsor. It was a national tour kind of thing. They brought all this marketing material to the forefront. You know, they brought all that stuff. But it's just interesting to me that Juno kind of wouldn't let it go away, right? I mean, people demanded it still, even though that part of it was no longer going to be how it existed. Doing it and curating it on your own, as you already said, people, you're getting the word out enough, but people have already, 88 people have already figured out that to buy tickets. And so
hopefully we'll have another,
yeah.
at least another 100.
Well, this show, you know, once you're on this show,
yeah.
that's what really puts you over the top. Yeah.
Yeah. And but. Juno tends to be a community where people kind of last minute.
Yeah, sure. That's really true.
But
we talked about the subject of one of the films.
Yes.
What are some of the other
so
kind of subjects?
So there's another film that looks at the term tomboys and how people are still labeled that and what that means into adulthood and struggles growing up when you're not fitting that mold. And even here in 2025, there are still struggles with being independent maybe and not following.
It's an interesting term to think mm-hmm. about. Probably not even used derogatorily mm-hmm. necessarily, mm-hmm. but really interesting. A label.
Yes.
You know, a label and how to deal with that as a label. Yeah.
So that's one that's going to be explored.
Right.
We have a couple of films that look at beauty and kind of the misconception and beauty standards. And thanks to different sorts of medias that unfortunately or fortunately we get to have there's a lot of comparison about how we look on the outside.
It's a really interesting subject. Mm-hmm. And as the dad of a daughter, I've kind of definitely, you know, thought about that issue quite a bit. It's interesting right now because on the one hand, there is a lot of body positivity. There's a lot of acceptance for lots of different ways for a person to look, for women especially to look. But on the other hand, we seem like we're more inundated than ever with the sort of perfect way you're supposed to look. You know, it just seems like there's this interesting place that we're at with, I guess, all information. But that's a fascinating thing to think about, how there's a – feels like there's both positives and negatives happening in that that kind of space right now.
Yeah, and there, I think still people are expected to look a certain way on the outside.
Definitely,
And there's a lot of pressure and there's a lot of shame about your body size and how you look. So there's a couple of films that touch upon that. We also have a film that it shows a woman about to get married, and her best friend goes to the bridal store to get fitted for her maid of honor dress. And she is not too happy with what her options are. And that's a very sweet film with a nice little twist. And our last film is a video poem. It sort of celebrates resilience and community as one woman tells the story, again, in a poetic fashion of her abortion.
So some of these, some of this collection of films deals very specifically with the crux of the issue that Juno Pro-Choice Coalition deals with, which is abortion, parenthood, those types of things. But then some of them are really about sort of womanhood in a way, and the sort of broader discussion of that.
There's two that deal with abortion and four that do not.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow. So let's talk about some of the nuts and bolts of it. Happens at Centennial Hall, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, doors open at 5:30, and that's when our silent auction begins. So we've had a lot of wonderful, generous donations from community members and businesses, everything from Spice is offering cooking classes, and Juno Compost is offering 3 months of compost. We have two hair salons, both Salon Cedar and Hair Today, have given us a bunch of wonderful hair and body products. Rainbow Foods, they're always great.
They're always
give a
amazing
great
on these things.
Certificate. Yep. So just a real variety of things that we all need.
Lots of art. Well, people go, and this, again, is happening on the 17th. Doors open at 5:30. People go. But there's movies, but there's also – is there a speaker?
Speakers,
is there other things happening too?
We have a speaker. We have a woman named Kara that's going to tell her abortion story. And though we don't say this is exactly a family event, and we've let people know that that is a topic that's going to be discussed. And, you know, if you have some maybe preteens, parents should be cautioned. But, you know, I spoke to a woman, she and her 12-year-old are coming. They come last year, and her daughter knows about this topic.
Yeah.
We also have AWARE speaking about a few different things, and also Representative Sarah Hannon. So I don't want to give away too much of what they're going to talk about, but I think it's going to be a very interesting, lively event. And again, it's a great community event where you're going to see a lot of your friends, and we encourage men to come because men need to and do support their partners in healthcare and abortions, and they're part of the issue as well. So that's really important for men to show up. We also have a special dessert auction, and that closes after intermission or around intermission, so you can take your dessert that you won because you were the highest bidder and share it with your friends. So we have about 15 different bars, cookies, treats that you'll get to auction.
And if you don't want that, we'll have popcorn too.
Yes.
So
I have to with movies,
yes,
of course.
You do.
Yes.
Popcorn and carbonated water, flavored water, you know, Pure Alaska.
Oh, yeah, I think
that's donating.
It. Yeah, right.
Is donating some
very
cases
cool
of water. So, yes, the community definitely is coming out and supporting us.
Awesome.
And we want to see you all there.
Evening happening at Centennial Hall. It's happening January 17th. Doors open at 5:30. It's Choice Fest, all happening there at Centennial Hall. Speakers, silent auctions, dessert auction, and of course, popcorn. Can't forget the popcorn.
Can't forget the popcorn.
Well, Amy and Lorraine, thanks so much for coming in. Thanks for keeping Choice Fest going, even after it sort of had to change what it was. But that's all right. It's a classic example of Juno keeping on trucking with the stuff, even though things change through the years.
That's right.
Thanks so much, and have a great festival.
Thanks,
all right.
Andy.
All
right.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon on community-supported KTOO. Joining me now, Ed Schoenfeld. Ed, how are you?
I am fine.
And
happy
Ed, you're
to
here to talk about death with desserts, the return.
The return of death with desserts.
Yes.
That's right. It's 4 or 5 years in the winter we've done programs where we focus on one or a small number of historic true crime cases here
nice
in Juneau.
Nice, in the winter especially, when we're already feeling a little down to really think.
They're all really very upbeat, and plus we give you delicious dessert, this year's desserts. Will be fancy cupcakes of different types.
Well, I know these are highly anticipated events. This one is really an interesting story. The End of a Boy Hero is sort of the title of this. Tell me a little bit about this.
Sure. Well, it starts in 1917 when a Juno boy sort of sneaks off and enlists in World War One. World War One had been going on for a couple of years, but the United States joined in 1917, and there was a lot of, you know, patriotic energy towards that. A lot of people were enlisting, but he had just
right? That was the
and the Turks and the Hungarians and the Austrians. But anyway, and mostly the Germans there, but and he ends up being the youngest Alaskan. To enlist and to serve in World War One, possibly one of the youngest in the country.
Do we have an accurate assessment of his age?
And he had just turned 15.
15.
And you were supposed to be older than that.
Now, was it fairly easy for him to fake it, or does it get into?
Well, I
get
think
into
at that point in time they wanted as many people as possible. Yeah. I don't know if he had a fake ID.
Just looked older been, or something.
Somehow or other pulled it off.
Yeah.
And, you know, goes over, serves, is injured, survives, comes back and becomes an important person around town and until he gets killed more than a decade later. And I don't want to go into too many more details because that would give away the program.
I'm so intrigued. I want to know more, Ed.
Well,
can you tell me?
Well, one of the fun things about this particular show is that, you know, we really enjoy researching. It might be the most fun part. And we look at a lot of old newspapers. And almost everything, along with court files and ancestry records and census data and all that, and almost everything we got for this one, at least large majority, came from the newspaper, The Empire, which was, I think, the Alaska Daily Empire or the Daily Alaska Empire then. It used both names at different times, plus several others. And because this young fellow, Leroy Vestal, his stepfather, worked at the Empire, not as a reporter, although they had no byline, so it could have been the ad salesperson who was also running the press, who was also, you know, running the linotype and writing whatever they
could. They had no byline. This is just as
no bylines. No, just in general until the 1950s.
Really?
Really.
Was that a standard of most newspapers?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly when it came here, but we researched this a couple of years ago, and it wasn't until the 50s till it was pretty common.
Wow.
And then it started out, it was just, if you did a real special story,
right,
then you'd get your name on it. Otherwise, it would just have the newspaper.
Yeah.
And there's a variety of reasons for that. But anyway, because he had a close relative working at the newspaper, pretty much every damn thing he did got in the newspaper. Because newspapers in those days, and we'll talk about this in the presentation more, printed everything. They printed who was admitted to the hospital, who was released from the hospital, why they were there, what condition they were in, who was staying at hotels, who left hotels, who came in on a particular steamship or other boat. I mean,
two things that's interesting about that. Mm-hmm. One is the triviality of it is fascinating, but also the concepts of privacy must have been radically different.
Very different.
Yeah.
This was before, you know, HIPAA, the Health Information Protection Law. But at the same time, when you think about some of the information, because they just have a column called Personal Notes, and it might say, Leroy Vestal had 17 people over for cake for his 16th birthday. I mean, that was the sort of thing we found. On one hand, that stuff was out there and in the newspaper for everybody who was literate to read, which certainly wasn't everybody back then. But these days, you know, you go on your social media of choice, whether it's Facebook or X or Instagram or Blue Ski or whatever, Blue Sky. I keep calling it Blue Ski.
Isn't
that a cartoon character? Anyway, you know, people are talking about all sorts of details of their life. So that's more personal choice. But this was just routine.
Yeah.
So
right.
If you could confirm that somebody had shown up in town because their name would be on the steamship report, or you can find the steamship records places.
Yeah, right,
not everything
right.
was there.
Yeah.
But so that's a big part of it. We talk about that a certain amount. And this is all under the umbrella of True Crime Alaska, which mm-hmm. is what we call our
yeah.
operation. And we do these presentations in the winter, usually three of them. We do some special presentations when we're asked. Betsy Longenbach, who's really the main person in here, my wife, but she's in Sitka, is doing a presentation, one of our cases in Sitka, later this month. And we did one for the Chamber of Commerce on Halloween. Kept saying, it's not a ghost story, but they seemed interested.
Yeah.
Things like that. So,
so technically a ghost
we
story.
We do those but, you know. In the summer. Most summers, we didn't last summer, but we're resuming this. We do historic crime, true crime murder tours, one in Douglas, one downtown, and we kind of trade off. It's a monthly thing. And we do that through the Juneau Douglas City Museum. And we don't make any money from this. The money made in the presentations go to the church, Holy Trinity Church, which hosts it. We're a member. And the summer tours go to the Juneau Douglas City Museum
to support it. Well,
so
that's great.
That's
you know, I was going to you just a little bit more about this one particular
mm-hmm.
lecture,
sure.
And we'll talk about all this other stuff that you guys have ahead as well. First of all, we should just say the lecture is on Saturday, January 25th.
Mm-hmm.
It's 3 p.m. It's at the Church of the Holy Trinity there on 4th mm-hmm. and Gold Street. So that's where it is, and it's desserts from Treadwell Kitchen. And so you and Betsy both present this? Is that what's going to happen?
Yes.
Okay, right.
Yes.
Great.
Again, Betsy's the main energy behind this, and she writes the books, which are a different topic, but we both research and put together our programs.
When you research, is there a way, is anything digitized at all? Is there a way to search for this person's
yeah.
name, that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's a website which is a Library of Congress website called chroniclingamerica.com. And it has, I don't know, probably millions of newspapers digitized, at least hundreds of thousands. I mean, not individual papers, but issues. And some of the Juneau newspapers, historic Juneau newspapers are in there. I think the Empire is in till 1963. But Juneau had couple dozen newspapers, you know, from 1900 on. And in fact, we found a lot of information about one of the other cases. There was a newspaper called the Alaska Dispatch, which did really, really good crime and court coverage. I mean, they would, you know, take two or three pages
wow.
occasionally
yeah.
to describe an exciting day in court, pretty much writing down everything.
That's a really
fascinating. Not the best journalism, but really yeah. good for researchers.
It's a fascinating to think mm-hmm. that the population of mm-hmm. Juneau must have been lower than it is today.
You know, a couple thousand.
Right, and that it would have multiple newspapers mm-hmm. supported is just an interesting thing
yeah.
to think about.
Well,
how
some of them
that
only
was.
Lasted a few months.
Sure.
A few just lasted one issue. But, you know, small towns had newspapers because no social media, no TV, no radio. You know, it was what
yeah.
you heard on street corners and in bars and restaurants and what was in the newspaper. So, you know, it was a lot more important in people's
yeah.
lives than, unfortunately, it is these days.
Let's talk a little bit more about number one, we've got this one coming up Saturday, mm-hmm. January 25th, but you've got other stuff coming up as
right.
well. One looks like looking ahead into spring.
Mm-hmm. On April 11th, we'll do a show called, a presentation called A Tenneke Shooting, and it's a 1906 case where basically a guy, I don't know if people here are listening have been to Tenneke, but the main store in town is Snyder's Merck or Snyder's Merck mercantile. And basically a guy walks in there and somebody comes out of a back room and shoots him dead. But it's a lot more complex about
wow.
that.
Yeah.
You know, who was the aggressor? Was it actually self-defense? What was the history there? And we've just, oh gosh, I just got through reading a lot of microfilm newspaper coverage of that because the trial was in Juneau up at the State Archives and Library. And just kind of a fascinating case.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously,
totally.
We don't do boring cases.
No, right.
We've found 80 to 100 murders in the period we cover, which is 1900 to statehood, 1959, and most are earlier on. And, you know, we've done the most interesting ones that there's information about.
Sure.
Usually that have some sort of satisfactory ending.
Right.
And the last show is May 31st called The Body on the Boat, and it's a case from Ketchikan of a fish buyer who is killed and robbed, or robbed and killed. I don't know which order. And all these take place at McPheeters Hall, which is on Gold Street, just below 4th Street, at Church of the Holy Trinity.
And the tickets you can get online at trinityjuno.org,
mm-hmm.
or you can also call 586-3532.
Which is the church, yep. You can get them online for all the shows. And if people want to just track what we're doing, we have a website, truecrimealaska.com, that has some information. But the most active and updated is a Facebook page. If you go to Facebook and search for True Crime Alaska, you'll get to Betsy Longenbaugh's author page where we have information about programs and tours and books. Do you mind if do we have time to
mention
the
books? Let's talk
about
Betsy's book.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Betsy has a new book out. It's based on one of the most interesting cases that we've covered here, but it's a novel. It's fictionalized, and it's called Death in the Underworld. And it's basically the underworld is the world of prostitution, which did very well in frontier Alaska and later Alaska. And that actually, I think, is just finally out in print today or yesterday. It's
All
been
right.
available online for pre-order for a while. And it and the, its predecessor, which is nonfiction, that's Forgotten Murders from Alaska's Capital, both were put out by Epicenter Press, which is really well known for its Alaska books, fiction and nonfiction, and it's expanded into Pacific Northwest too. And so they're the publisher.
Well, congratulations to Betsy for the publishing of her second book for the Epicenter
mm-hmm.
Books. That's great. And that's just available. Is it like available at Hearthside?
You know,
those kinds of things, or?
I haven't checked with
okay.
that's kind of next on my list is checking
okay.
to see if they're in the bookstores yet. It usually takes a while, but
sure.
Hearthside and the other local bookstores or places that sell books are really good at keeping track of, you know, what's coming
Absolutely,
up.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I haven't called them yet to ask.
Well, the first thing coming up, Death with Dessert, The End of a Boy Hero. That's going to be presented from 3 to 5 Saturday, January 25th at McPheeters Hall. It's at the Holy Trinity Episcopal Church there at 325 Gold Street. And again, the story of a decorated World War I veteran
mm-hmm.
And popular public figure who had an untimely end once he came back from the war after serving at the age of 15. Ed Schoenfeld, thanks so much, and have a great Death with Dessert.
Thank you. And it's not the shows are not dreary, and they're not about blood and guts.
No, it's all about the intrigue.
Yeah.
It's the whodunit aspect
It's the mystery.
Of it, yes.
And we talk a lot just about the era. You
yeah.
learn a lot of Juneau history.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's kind of my area of expertise.
Ed, thank you so much.
Thank
great
you.
Talking to you. Great to see you. Listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K right here at KTOO. I'm your host, Andy Klein, and joining me next is the Chief of Police. Here he is, the Chief himself, Derek Boss. How are you, Derek? Good to see you.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming in and just spending a little time with us and talking to us about some of the things going on at the police department here in Juneau. And I know that one of the things you're sort of kicking off is a new portion of a wellness program.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So we are actually today we rolled out a request for interest in being chaplains in our department. So we have a very robust wellness program. I think we're the best in the state, but I'm a little prejudiced. But this is kind of the last prong of that wellness program. So we've got clinicians, we've got a peer support team, and then we're adding the chaplain piece and health, physical health and whatnot. So, yeah, this is kind of the final piece. We're looking for 2 to 4 chaplains, local people to volunteer. And
what goes into that service of being a chaplain associated with the police department?
Absolutely. So the purpose is to help the officers. It's not something where we use them in the community. They're not grief counselors for the community. They are there for the officers to help the officers. When you look at wellness programs, there's 3 elements. There's your mental health, your physical health, and your spiritual health. And whatever those 3 look like, we want to be able to provide strength and services for all the staff, not just the officers, but dispatch, our support staff as well.
Such an interesting thing, because in just the work I've done in the past, I've worked for companies that have wellness programs, and they give you $10 off a gym membership, right? Which, hey, was welcome. I loved it. Thank you.
Yep.
But that kind of, it was about, make sure you don't go see the doctor more often, and let's make sure you're physically in good shape. But it's so interesting to think about these other parts of wellness as a whole.
Absolutely. And I think the mental health and that spiritual health, if you will, are the 2 that are overlooked the most. The way I describe it, our physical health is pretty self-explanatory. We want to stay healthy and upright. Mental health is how we get through today and survive today. Our spiritual health is how we thrive over the next 20 years of our career and finish as normal human beings. So it's the long-term goal that is the piece we're missing, and that's what we're trying to capture.
Well, in the line of work that you're in, of course, you can have incredibly traumatic experiences, tough experiences, and even just day-to-day things, stresses that are maybe beyond what a lot of people would normally encounter in their jobs.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the studies show, the average officer after 10 years is carrying a very heavy mental burden and a very high stress load. And so anything we can do to ease that and help them navigate that is absolutely crucial to serving the community better, to interacting with citizens better, all the way to the officers and our staff's family lives.
So, I mean, you and your force are the people that often see people at their worst, people at their most stressed, and then you have to be able to, deal with that. I'm sure there's training about how you deal with that when you're, right? I mean, that's your job, right? How do you deal with that in a way when you're on the job? But then you go home.
Right.
And that's the piece, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say the wellness program, all of our training is how to deal with that scenario and that environment. The wellness program is how do we deal with what we just experienced and how do we kind of de-stress from that and come home and be normal human beings with our families.
Tell me about how you deal with the other parts of it too. The spiritual is that we're recruiting for chaplains. Guys, let me back up. One thing is, so let's say there's someone listening right now that's interested in that. They have some background or they have some qualifications. Mm-hmm. What are you looking for? And how do they pursue it?
We have a flyer on our Facebook page, and I think it's going up on our website if it's not there already. That has all the contact information and just a general job description of what we're looking for. But we are not specific to any faith-based group. We're not looking for any specific religion affiliation. We are looking for somebody with basic training and skills in whatever belief system they have, and a endorsement or support from their leadership to do this. And we're asking for 4 hours a month. We will provide training of what the actual chaplains will do and what that looks like and how to interact with the officers. But beyond that, it's pretty simple.
Yeah. So then how about mental health and physical health? What are some of the programs you guys do? And we'll talk, because we're going to lead next into recruiting. So we want to set this up.
You bet.
So what a great place it is to work.
You bet, actually. So the other 2 are much broader categories. There's a lot more that goes into it.
I would think physical health is just got to be part of the job, right? I mean, it feels to me like that's got to be something that is, I don't know, tell me.
I would say physical health is straightforward, but there's a lot more to it than what you think about behind the scenes. So last week we call it a wellness expo. We are the only law enforcement agency in the state that does anything like it, but we roll out all the resources available to officers that are here in Juneau. We reach out to different entities to help us put this on and then show the officers everything that, that they have. So that captures everything from how do you plan for retirement? That's a physical health thing. I want to be able to have a roof over my head when I retire.
Sure. Yeah.
Massage therapy, which, you know, we carry a lot of stuff on our bodies. That's really hard on your hips, your shoulders, your back. Massage therapy can really help navigate some of our chronic pain problems with that.
Well, that's true. I never even thought about that. But you guys, like, just your uniform is heavy.
It is.
You know, and the equipment that you've got on, and depending on the what you're having to do that day. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Right.
So I weighed all the stuff I'm wearing right now, and I put on about 27 pounds every day.
Really?
So the nice thing is when I go home at night, it's a great weight loss program.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But, yeah, so also on the physical side is nutritional health, sleep health. You know, we work at night. Human beings, we're not really we're not creatures that are supposed to be up all night.
Yeah,
so that's hard on the body. So how do we get healthy sleep? How do we do that day in and day out with interruptions in the daytime for court and whatnot? So all that falls into the physical health. The mental health piece, again, is very diverse. That gets into sleep is a big factor there. If I don't feel good, I don't think well. So those two are very closely related. But we have a lot of stress debriefs, critical incident stress debriefs. We have therapy available for the officers or counseling, however you want to term it, same thing. And then we have a great peer support team within the department. Our peer support team has three prongs to it. We have peer support for the officers themselves. And that's an officer who's trained specifically on how to interact with fellow officers. We have that at all levels. So the officers, the sergeants, the command staff, we have peer support at each level. Then we have our professional staff. So dispatchers, record staff, evidence, CSOs, we have peer support in that world as well. They experience many of the same stressors, not all, but many of the same ones. So we care for that as well. And then the third prong is our significant others peer support group. So I might be dealing with something stressful at work, but that does impact my wife or my spouse. You know, my wife, I can tell you, has been through a tremendous amount during this career, and having the peer support element there of people to talk to, people who've experienced similar events, is just amazing.
Wow, yeah, that's really incredible to hear that it's been that thought through. Yeah. Well, and then speaking of working there, you are now currently recruiting for officers and dispatchers as well.
We are.
Yeah.
One caveat on the dispatch position, we just updated the job description, so we'll actually be reposting it soon, but it's not active right now.
Okay.
But we're looking for three dispatchers. We have 10 officer vacancies, so if you want to be a cop, we are the place to be.
Now, would that include training up, going to the academy in Sitka, that kind of stuff?
Absolutely.
All that? Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so we.
So just people who are interested, really even just have an interest, you want to hear from them.
Joinjpd.com.
All right.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from them.
Now, are there cases where people who get into dispatch work their way into becoming officers? Is that a way of transitioning in, or is it a really different career track?
You know, I would say it's a very different career track. We do see some dispatchers who become officers or officers who become dispatchers, but in general, it's a different career track. But what we do see is people who become community service officers and work their way up to being an officer. The CSO function is a great training grounds for officers. It helps them learn the community. It helps them learn the geography of Juneau, helps them learn the municipal codes. And then if they become an officer after that, that's just a big step forward.
Wow,
towards
yeah.
that position.
And for dispatch, what are some of the things that people might think about if they're, you know, if they haven't thought about that as a career choice before?
You know, they truly are first responders themselves. They're the first one to answer the phone when you call for help. So when you call 911, they are really there. They're the voice on the other end, or, you know, kind of that calm reason. They help navigate the crisis until first responders get on scene. So they are definitely first responders. There are some people who don't want to be out and about in a car or out and about doing that, but they still want to be first responders. It's a great niche for them.
Wow, yeah.
You've got to be able to multitask. It is a busy place. I have nothing but respect for what they do every day. Between phones, computers, and radios, they are true masters at multitasking. But yes, they're the heroes behind the phone.
Yeah, right. Well, and as you said, that specific announcement is being edited right now, but it'll be up in the next few days, and people can keep an eye out for that. Where's the best place for people to find this stuff out and track what's going on as far as recruitment?
Joinjpd.com.
Okay.
That's our website for recruitment, so that's the easiest place to go, and then there's different links from there to the different positions. We've got our recruitment contact info on there as well, so.
JoinJPD.com is the place to go to find out more about that. And,
yes,
and boy, just thanks for coming in and letting us know everything that's going on. Anything else we want to cover while I've got you in the studio here?
You know, I think we captured most
of
it. One final plug on recruitment. We do have other positions that pop up now and then. So, for example, network specialists, data positions in the IT industry. So
it's a big organization. How many people approximately are in the department?
Roughly 98.
Wow. So you got 100 people essentially working in the department, keeping people in Juneau safe and serving our community in lots and lots and lots of different ways.
Yes, sir.
Well, Derek, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it. Great to talk to you. That's Chief of Police Derek Boss. And joinjpd.com is the place to go if you're interested in working in the department. Recruitment right now is happening for officers and dispatch, but there's lots of other stuff to keep your eye out there for as well on joinjpd.com. Chief Boss, thanks so much for coming in. Really appreciate talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. And you're listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Andy Klein. Joining me now, Daniel Martin. Daniel, thanks so much for coming in. Daniel's with Two Left Feet Alaska, and love that name, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And dance classes and dance events and all kinds of great stuff
going on. Yeah, this is really the dancing season.
I know, it's leading up to Folk Fest. I know that's like
exactly
one of the big thing.
Leading up to Folk Fest, and it's, you know, the holiday season is over, the travel, all that travel that people are doing, you know, and it's not summer yet. It's not, people are still, there's lots of time to spend indoors. People are looking for things to do. So this is like primo dancing season.
And so let's talk about swing dance seems like some of the, like, that's the dance I know. I know swing, right?
Yeah.
And it's the easiest in a way, just because, like, you can dance swing to so many different forms of music.
It's true. It's
true. I don't know about easiest. Yeah. You probably look, but I mean, to me, it feels
there's
like
different
that.
Levels,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, different levels. Yeah, so swing dancing is probably the most maybe widely known, you know, kind of accessible. You know, when you say swing dancing, people have at least some idea of what you're talking about, even if they haven't done it themselves. They've seen it on commercials or movies and whatnot. So there's swing dance stuff happening. Me and my partner do teach swing from time to time, and we lately have been teaching swing lessons at the Alaska Club, second and fourth Fridays. That's a thing me and my partner Andy have been doing, who couldn't make it here today. She's got jury duty. Otherwise she was going to be here to keep me company. But we're doing that, and a friend of ours, Eric Orovsky, he's hosting swing lessons, mostly West Coast swing, every Sunday at the Red Dog. And that's every Sunday except for the football thing. Super Bowl, that's the one.
That's the one. The big game.
What's that called?
Call it.
So that's like not until February. But anyways, other than that, he's there like every Sunday at 6 o'clock, and there's open dancing until 9. So it's actually a good chance to just sort of socialize and hang out.
It's fun when you say West Coast. Like, I remember the other one, Lindy Hop, is this wild variety of swing as well. There's all these different varieties of swing dancing.
Exactly. So we don't just do swing dancing. In fact, I wouldn't even say that swing is our main thing, me and my partner. So what we are really into is called blues dancing, or sort of maybe adjacent to that, fusion dancing. And it actually comes from, swing and blues, you know, all this American music, you know, that came out of, you know, the early, you know, the middle of the 20th century, you know, all that's related. And so the different dance styles and different dance forms that came out of that, you know, they're all related too. And so I'm more interested in the way things are connected than the way things are different. But what we like to teach, and what we are also teaching at some of our second and fourth Friday classes at the Alaska Club, just a, by the way, those are open to non-members. It's not just, it's a special programs thing. It's not just for members of the Alaska Club. Is that right?
So you go in and pay?
Exactly. There's no pre-registration. There's no sign up in advance.
Gotcha.
You know, the studio's big. We can accommodate big classes, and we've had some pretty big classes lately. So yeah, no, that's a show up at the event, 6 o'clock, pay the front desk. I mean, that's that. But yeah, so, you know, going into, we're going to be doing more of this. So blues dancing, let me, I guess, just back up a little bit. Blues dances, just like swing dances, there's Lindy Hop, there's a bunch of different kinds. There's also a bunch of different kinds of sort of blues dances. But the sort of the commonality is that they're really about communication. It's really treating dance as a communication between two people. So it can be sort of very approachable in that way and accessible to people, because it really is about sort of fundamentals of connecting with the music and connecting with your partner. And then, yes, there's moves and there's footwork patterns and there's all kinds of stuff to build on top of that. But the foundation of it is sort of just this kind of fundamental sort of connection and relationship. And so we're really into that. And that is also something that we work into our teaching at the Alaska Club, and also in our private lessons that we're doing more and more of.
Well, the ones that I highlighted here is, we've got Swingin' to Slow Jazz coming up on January 24th. That's at the JRC, Alaska Club downtown. And then Date Night Dance on Valentine's Day, February 14th. I mean, that's pretty good, right?
Exactly.
There, right?
Yeah, that's, you know, you can kind of imagine that, you know, that's going to be more of a slow dancing kind of thing. Yeah. So, you know, we're going to.
What are some examples when you say slow dance? Are you thinking waltz kind of stuff, or are you thinking?
It's kind of hard to make this stuff relatable, I guess, or to find, because there's not as much sort of stuff in the popular, popular media, I guess, that relates to blues dancing. But like ballroom and blues is a style of blues dancing that we've studied and that we teach. And that is a sort of a close partner dancing style, kind of. You know, it's kind of like tango, but it's not tango.
I was going to say,
it's kind of like that in sort of a superficial way, I guess. But the the music you do it to is different. The approach and the aesthetic and just sort of the way you carry your body is different. But yes, a close partner dancing. And I do want to make this clear, especially for the date night dance. You know, in social dance classes, it's very common to rotate partners and to switch partners. But especially for the stuff we're going to do in February, which is going to be closer partner dancing, where, you know, for the most part, it's going to, the default is, I mean, you come with your partner and you want to dance with your partner. You know, we're not going to try to make you rotate, you know.
Well, but that's an interesting.
We're trying to make it open to everybody. If
you
want to come.
That's an interesting thing you're saying there, because the dance classes I've taken, I remember feeling so awkward to have to dance with someone other than my partner. But it was also incredibly useful to dance with someone other than your partner, right? It is.
We do encourage it.
Yeah.
We do encourage it.
It's almost like you're not really learning to dance the way you're not, in some ways, not learning to dance unless you dance with someone who's not your partner.
It's true. It is very helpful. Like, if this is something you want to, you know, really get good at, or just get comfortable at, just get proficient at, it is very important to dance with different people, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah. So for, you know, the date night dance thing in on Valentine's Day,
nice.
We do want to really accommodate.
Yes.
We want to make it approachable for everyone. You know, if you want to come and be with your partner, that's great. If you want to come by yourself, you know, we'll be switching out. You know, me and my partner who teach together. You know, we like to rotate in and dance with everybody while we teach. So that's tons of fun.
And then the Red Dog too. You've got the Sunday Swing happening at the Red Dog. Now that's the one that Eric is doing.
That's the one that Eric's doing. He teaches a West Coast swing class typically.
And it's every Sunday at the Red
Sunday,
Dog.
Yep.
Up until Folk Fest.
Yes. That's right. It's like a.
I love it. I love get you ready for Folk Fest. I mean, that is the real true marathon you're training for.
That's right.
Folk Fest.
That's right. The marathon. And I guess, you know, I guess speaking of sort of training, you know, a lot of people, especially couples, you know, are looking towards maybe there's going to be some weddings happening this summer, you know, maybe their own wedding, but maybe just a wedding you're going to go to. Maybe you're not quite comfortable and you want to work on getting more comfortable with your own partner or just with yourself, just doing, you know, just you going to dance classes or whatever, but you're a little uncomfortable with the group setting. We are very into teaching private lessons. That's something we really started to ramp up doing. just recently. Actually, we taught a lesson last night. We're teaching a lesson tomorrow night, a private lesson at our, I'm calling it our Valley Studio. It's our house in the Valley. We have a nice, spacious living room where we do private lessons. And so that is something we really try to make available to people and accommodate people's, you know, wherever you are with your budget.
Well, that's great. Yeah.
So, and that's really the best way to get, you know, one-on-one, you know, teaching and be able to connect more deeply with your partner. That's sort of what our goal is. You
know, well, Daniel, thanks so much for coming and telling us all about it. It's a local dance events with two Left Feet Alaska. Daniel and Andy are great dance instructors, and they'll walk you through it. And as you said, you've got these ones that are happening at second and fourth Fridays at the Alaska Club downtown. That's from 6 to 8 p.m. One's coming up on January 24th, swinging to slow jazz, and one's happening on Valentine's Day as well. And then every Sunday, there's swing dancing at the Red Dog Saloon from 6 to 9, and that's Eric Orovsky, doing that. And that's happening all the way up until Folk Fest. As we were saying, the Folk Fest, that's the event. What a great event every year happening right here in Juneau. Daniel, thanks so much for coming up. Anything else you want to cover? One more thing to cover? Yeah.
I want to make sure that this is a lot of information we just threw out at you. So yes. there's two places you can go to find all this in one place. One is on Facebook at the Juneau Dance Facebook page. Just search Juneau Dance. It's a public Facebook group. All these events and also stuff that happens at the bars, live music, all that stuff I try to post there. Also, I'm putting together what I'm calling the Dancer's Digest. It's an email and possibly later print newsletter. Email me at twoleftfeetak@pm.me. twoleftfeetak@pm.me, and I will sign you up for the Dancer's Digest. And I will be putting out just once or twice a month everything that is of interest to people who love dancing and live music.
All right, Daniel, thanks so much for coming in. That's it for Juneau Afternoon for today. Thanks for joining us, everyone.